Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Wild Ones podcast, episode 31. This is the show where we chat about bike stuff. I'm Jimmy, and this week I'm back with pro bike mechanic Nick and producer Emily. Hello, guys. How you doing?
Not bad, yourself?
What have you been up to?
Bikepacking in Scotland.
Nice.
It was really cold. I didn't expect it. But at least no wind and the sun was shining.
Why were you not expecting it? It's Scotland in winter.
Well, the weather said 5 degrees. And I got there and it was -4. So, I mean, I don't know how the weather messed it up.
To be honest, my preparation for 5 degrees would be the same as my preparation for -4 anyway.
No, 5 degrees is practically summer.
That's shorts and summer jersey. For
10
you,
degrees
isn't it?
Is shorts. 5 degrees is what I did. Base layer, long sleeve jersey, and just something like a windstopper. Obviously, that didn't work out very well for me. But yeah, it's good.
Right, so I've got a question for you both. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you enjoy those little free packets of Haribo that you get when you order stuff online, like from Wiggle?
Oh, solid 9.8. Love them.
I love Haribo, but I've never gotten a packet of Wiggle.
Well, yeah, you don't order stuff from Wiggle, surely. He's got a bike shop. Why would he? Well, this week we finally learned the true cost of those sweets. It was revealed that online retailer Wiggle owed Haribo over £20,000 at the point that they went into administration. It seems weird that a bike company would own Haribo 20 grand. It's absolutely bonkers, isn't it?
I wonder how much one of those single packets costs. It's got to be pennies, hasn't it?
Must be pennies, yeah.
Surely they're getting a bulk discount.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of sweets.
That's a lot of sweets.
We've talked a lot about Wiggle already, so we won't dwell on it too long. But the administrator's report showed that they owed creditors a total of £26.7 million. That's UK distributor Madison and Extra UK were owed about £1 million each. Garmin are owed 850 grand. Science and Sport, 660 grand. POC about 500 grand. Seller Italia and Endura about 400 grand. The list goes on. Apparently some of the debts have now been paid in full, but that is a huge amount of debt. So I can only imagine what impact that has on some of the smaller businesses that they are working with. That's huge amounts of money.
It seems like huge amounts, but perhaps that's normal in any given month. Maybe they've just got massive lines of credit because they're so big.
They definitely will have big lines of credit for sure.
Yeah.
Elsewhere in the news, RoadCC has been asking, what is the ultimate winter bike? They reckon it's a gravel bike rather than a road bike modified for winter. So Nick, this is clearly something you've got a lot of experience with, in that you've sold God knows how many bikes, winter ones, summer ones, every type of bike you can possibly imagine. So let's jump into this a little bit. Firstly, if you're relatively new to cycling, what is a winter bike?
I suppose, obviously, we've got listeners from all over the world listening to it, but in countries like England and that have more extreme winters, generally people have bikes that put up with the salt on the roads a bit better, something you ride during the bad weather months.
Yeah, ultimately winter is definitely for us wet, muddy. Even if you only ride on road, it's still muddy. There's, like you said, there's salt on the road. So a lot of definitely road cyclists, well, not a lot of, but some road cyclists will have two bike. two bikes. They have their nice fancy summer bike that they pull out when the weather's a bit better or just in the summer months, and then something a bit more durable and hardy for the rest of the year. It's definitely something I've done a lot of historically.
We were discussing this the other week, and I think it's died down a little bit. And I think it's happened since disc brakes. Back with rim brake days, if you had carbon wheels, they don't stop as well in the wet as alloy wheels. So people for winter used to switch over to the alloy wheels, which are generally on their winter bikes.
Yeah.
But now with disc brakes, you've got the consistency. So I think more people are actually riding the good bikes through the winter.
I do.
It's becoming more normal. I mean, I remember being told off by a guy at a cafe 4 years ago for riding carbon wheels in winter.
I guess if it, like you said, though, if it's carbon wheels but they're disc brakes, then it's still going to be perfectly fine.
Yes, but you have to take in consideration salt. Salt on the roads isn't good for your bike. So as long as you wash your bike after every ride on the roads, even if it's dry out, because there's still going to be salt on them, you can look after a bike a bit better. But there's arguments for winter bikes as well. Back in the day, it was a thing of you ride your heavier winter bike with all the extra accessories and tools and things you would need for the winter on it to kind of have your training block over winter. And when summer came, when you switched back to your summer bike, it might have been a bit of psychology involved in it, but all of a sudden it just feels a bit more lively and kind of ready to go.
My good friend and historic training partner, Ben Wickham, is a huge believer in this. So he's a triathlete. His race bike is obviously a super high-end triathlon TT bike, and then all of his winter riding would be on a specialized Allee, like a 15-year-old Allee with like the cheapest group set he can get on it, the cheapest wheels, just the heaviest, most juxtaposed bike you can possibly get to his race bike. So that, and he's all, as he's doing all of his winter training on that bike, he's thinking about, well, when I get on my TT, it is going to be like lightning.
It just feels better. I mean, I did the same. Growing up in South Africa, Pretoria, where I grew up, we've got no winter rainfall. So winter months, arguably, it's dry. So it's a perfect weather to train in, but we still train. We even did it during the week. So you have a training bike and your racing bike only came out for races.
Actual
races. And it kind of like makes it feel, which is a bit of a waste of a bike if you think about it, because you're not getting to enjoy it. So now I'm kind of using my gravel bike for everything. If I had to rebuy a bike for winter, it'd be a gravel bike.
So let's run through it then. So we're going to discuss what the ultimate winter bike setup is, and I know we are going to have differing opinions on it. So let's start off with top of the list, material. What material is your winter bike going to be made from?
Titanium.
I knew you were going to say titanium.
Titanium is just always going to win. Doesn't rust, doesn't corrode. There's no risks. Even steel eventually will corrode unless it's stainless steel, but stainless steel itself isn't.
It's probably more expensive than titanium these days.
And it's not corrosion proof either. Alloy is going to eventually cause you problems. It's not bad. Alloy is a good cheap option, but if you, like James just figured out, his current frames lasted 5 years. Now it's just become really flexing, giving him problems.
Mm.
Carbon.
The caveat to that is he's a brute on a bike.
Yes.
He rides an offensive amount of miles and he rides in all conditions, all weathers. Granted, he maintains his bikes fantastically because he works in a bike shop.
No, he doesn't. All right. He works in a bike shop, but doesn't maintain them.
But yeah, like 5 years to him is probably 15 years to a normal person.
Yes. He's harsh on the bike. But yeah, carbon is a problem if your carbon's got alloy bonded into it or other materials sometimes. So titanium is...
Is carbon a problem for winter? It's not, is it?
If you look after the bike, but there are some bikes where you've got your bottom bracket shells are bonded in, alloy bonded into the carbon.
But if it's like a full carbon frame, it should make an all right winter bike.
I want to say yes, in theory. But you're always going to have problems because if it's a full carbon bike, generally it's going to have press fit bottom bracket.
Yeah.
So that'll start creaking eventually. And I mean, I'm not, yeah, it'll work. You can do it. I mean, I've done it for years and years, but it's not. In terms of, we're talking about what's the best, titanium is still going to come out as the best.
I think, and I hate to say it, I'm going to agree with you. If I was buying, and I've actually considered recently, now I've started, so my new house now where I live, or it's not new, it's 6 months, We are like super comfortable there. We're probably going to spend the rest of our lives there. I found a little local loop that I really enjoy doing, and already doing it over the last 2 months or whatever it is, I'm like, oh, this is putting a lot of dirt and crap into my like my summer bike. And I'm already going like, maybe I should get a proper winter bike. I think as much as I love steel, I think I would get a titanium bike for a winter bike setup.
It's been busy and I'm not good at washing my bike. I've done this bikepacking trip and my bike's parked up in the house. It's not been washed in a few days. And it's with it, any other bike would have been worried. But because I've got a titanium bike, I've got Enduro's XD15 bearings all throughout. It just won't ever wear out. There's no worry. I'll wash it tomorrow and the bike will just be good to go. Bit of chain lube. It's just for ease of use and you don't have to worry about it. If you look after your bikes all the time, then it's not a massive issue. What you ride?
Right, group set. What are you putting on it? So we've picked a material. Let's pick a style of bike. Are you going to get a gravel bike or a road bike?
Gravel bike.
Because of clearance?
Tire clearances. So you can ride it on road, you can ride it off road. But also in winter, off road is just sometimes nicer. You can hide from the elements a bit better. Up here, we've got most of the disused railway lines are protected from the wind. You're slightly a bit more protected from the cars and all the grey, dark air. Because winter, we've got less sunlight. So you're not riding. It's just, you've got options. You can ride on the road, but you can ride off-road as well. Where if you had a road bike, you're not riding off-road.
But if you had a gravel bike already,
yeah,
and you wanted a winter bike, you would get an additional gravel bike,
yes.
Interesting. I think I would buy a gravel bike, but I would set it up as a road bike. But I like because I would want mud guards on it, which we'll come to in a moment. We won't discuss that yet. But I wouldn't want to put mud guards on it that could accommodate massive tires because it's just overkill. So I would have a gravel bike set up as a road bike with mud guards and road wheels, road tires.
Bigger tires.
Yeah, big tires.
Not massive, but like 35 mil tires.
Exactly, so, yeah. With a bit of grip on them, but not gravel tires. But I would do it as a gravel bike because it just gives me more options. If I decide I never want to ride a road bike in the winter again, I can strip it and rebuild it as a proper gravel bike.
We're using the term gravel bike too loosely. It's a big tire clearance bike.
Yes.
Because traditionally road bikes had 28 mil tire clearance. It is now, over the last 2 years, changing where quite a few road bikes have up to 35 mil. A tire clearance, and some will go even bigger still going forward. But when we say gravel bike, we mean a bike that can take at least 35 mil tire clearance.
Exactly, yeah.
And have space for a bit of like dirt and stuff to not rub all the paint off your bike as soon as
I would want 35 or 38 mil tires that are basically slicks, but like maybe a little bit of a tread pattern, but not a gravel tread, and then proper mud guards. And therefore that means there needs additional clearance as well. And the likelihood is that in this day and age, that means I would buy a titanium gravel bike for that to be able to work.
And this is obviously, if we're being very wasteful and buying loads of bikes, if you could just buy one bike, that could still do everything you needed to do.
Exactly. Group set. What group set are you putting on it?
Electronic.
Yeah, specific.
It's less corrosion. So SRAM's wireless group sets works incredibly well for me. The gravel specific ones. I'd run one by. Once again, you just want less moving parts on the bike. And lastly, if I didn't have any of that, I'd go 8-speed Shimano.
Why?
8-speed Shimano's tolerance for shifting is just better. It's more durable. It just lasts. You don't have to worry about it. It's not expensive.
What's an example of 8-speed Shimano these days?
They change like every year. It used to be Olivio. And then it was a Sierra, I want to say. To be honest,
is this specifically 8-speed, or do you ultimately just mean like an entry level?
No, specifically 8-speed. So from 6-speed, 7-speed, 8-speed, they didn't change the chains. It's the same chain thickness. 6, 7, 8-speed, same. So it's just because so you've got 6-speed durability, but you've got 8-speed gears. I can see the cogs working in your brain over there.
Yeah.
So when they went from 8-speed to 9-speed, they made the chains thinner. They made the cassette spacings thinner. Then 10-speed, obviously, that became even more. 11-speed more, 12-speed. But 8-speed had the same as 6-speed.
So you're ultimately saying that because there's less speeds, everything's a bit beefier and therefore it's more durable. So I would want an electric group set because shifting electric gears, especially when you've got big fat gloves on and your hands are cold and they don't work properly is just a dream.
Unless you're riding DO2 and then you've got a massive problem trying to hit those buttons with your big gloves.
Unless you ride one by and you have it SRAM set up left and right.
I suppose.
Can you actually do that? I keep meaning to do that on my gravel bike.
I should know this. I'm pretty sure you can.
You must be able to.
Actually, I haven't tried it.
I'll try and work it out and let you know. But yeah, like electric shifting, if it was viable, because yeah, like I said, it's just easier to do in when your hands don't want to work properly. But if not, I would go cheap.
Yeah, so the only thing I wouldn't go 8-speed anymore is the disc brake and the electronic gears. If they can make me a disc brake electronic 8-speed group set, I'd be incredibly happy.
Oh, that's a point. So you actually wouldn't be able to put that on then?
Well, you can if you've had a bike that can fit.
Oh, actually, no. So you wouldn't. So because assuming you're buying and you would be getting a modern bike and therefore that group set wouldn't work.
Yes.
So actually that doesn't work. So it would have to be like a Tiagra or a Sora or
SRAM
maybe Apex. A 105. Yeah, that's a good group set. Wheels. I, to be honest, I would do like mid or shallow depth carbon wheels on disc brakes are just like that's just the way it is now. So I would just put a bog standard, you know, Zip 303S or Parkour's Alters or whatever they are. Just something that's got a nice wide rim, has a reputation for being good with tubeless and is going to be durable. The benefit of something like Zip is they have a lifetime warranty now, do they? So you know, you got that to back it up as well.
Not in the bearings though. So I think the most important thing for winter wheels is to find something with sealed cartridge bearings where you can just knock them out and put new ones in.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing to look for. Other than that, you know, start looking at nipple choice because that's going to corrode eventually. You're going to have to start looking at depth is really important. I think if you live somewhere, it's windy, so shallow is better.
Yeah.
I would like a wider internal rim width so you can fit bigger tires without having it, like when you pump it up, if it's low pressure and you're going uphill, you don't want the tire to feel like a squidgy while riding.
Yeah.
So a slightly wider internal rim width does help with bigger tires. So my ultimate wheel for this would probably be Mavic's new Allroads.
Right.
Because they do them 650B and 700C.
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah. Are you going 650 or 700 for your winter setup?
For road bikes, 700 for me.
But is it a road bike? Because you've already said you've picked a gravel bike and you want the versatility.
Yeah, but and the topic is all-round winter bike to ride on the road.
It would have to be 700C
for that. If you're riding on the road a lot, yeah.
Tires?
Tires is a difficult one. I don't know the exact temperature, but a few years ago, it became a big thing with winter tires. Certain rubbers become really hard and not malleable enough to kind of work properly below 5 degrees, I think it is. So you need to pick a tire that's actually going to work in cold conditions if your winters are below 5. You want something that's slightly grippy, slightly more puncture resistant because you don't want to be stuck next to the road if something goes wrong.
Well, I've got a set of tires on my road bike that you or James sold me from Backyard. I can't remember what. So basically, I went bikepacking with Francis in Spain. God, it might even be 2 Novembers ago now. I think it is. It's 2 years ago. And I had, by my choice, is it Vittoria tires that have got the yellow amber walls? Is that the ones that I always used to get?
Courses, yeah.
It is Vittoria's, yeah. Isn't it? And they are so slippery. I remember descending down some of the stuff in Spain in November, but it was still, you know, it was Spanish winter, but it was still sun out and 15 degrees. And the back end of the bike was sliding all over the place. And then I did a training ride in the Pennines shortly after, and I remember going up a really steep climb out the saddle and it was slipping out all over the place. And then you or James, can't remember which one of you said, you don't want those, you want these instead. I feel like they might even be Michelin tires.
So Michelin Krillion 2s, they don't make them anymore, but I still believe it's the greatest tire ever made.
Is that what they are?
Yes.
They are unbelievably good.
So I think the company line back in the day when they started, Michelin was very good at using their MotoGP rubber technology on their bicycle tires as well.
Yeah.
So it's just a really good rubber. They last incredibly long, very puncture resistant, but the problem's been that they've discontinued them and they don't do tubeless anymore either. But yeah, that is my favorite all time. If they were to bring out a tubeless version of that now, would probably be the only tire stock in the shop.
It is so good.
It wasn't expensive either. I mean, I think full retail was £35 and we were selling them for 15 quid a tire.
Yeah. It is just the best road tire I've ever used. There's just so much grip on it, and it's really grippy, but it also isn't, it's like wearing well. Yeah, it's not just like disintegrating.
It's got no tread on it. It's a perfectly smooth tire, but it's just show you don't actually on the road need tread. You just need, it's a rubber compound that's important.
Yeah. So I would get more of them, but I can't. So I don't know. Ultimately, my tire choice would be, like I said earlier, 35 mil, maybe even 38 tubeless road tire. That's got a good reputation. I'm actually not that precious about how puncture resistant they are because, if I was riding it on the road, I would hope that the setup and the tubeless would get me through most things.
Yeah, tubeless has changed everything, so you don't need something that's massively...
Yeah, like the old days, it would be like a gator skin or... I used to use specialized armadillos, which then they changed and became rubbish, but originally they were amazing.
I'd pick a tire that's high volume, so you can run slightly lower pressures with good sealant in it.
What are you putting on then?
What tires? Yeah. Terravale, Rampart, and a 35 mil, I reckon, is the tire to go for.
There we go. So I said earlier I was going to mention mudguards. I 100% would put mudguards on, and they would be fully fitted ones, preferably alloy ones rather than plastic, but plastic would be fine as long as it was a nice shape. And I put a big fat flap on the back of it as well and a big fat flap on the front to get as much water off me and the bike as possible. And I know you're going to get very upset about this, but that is what I would do, and it is exactly what I want to do.
I don't understand what the flaps and mud... Rain comes from the sky, not from the ground.
Yeah, but it splashes up. You clearly spent too much time riding in South Africa as a junior.
What's the rear flap for then?
Well, that's meant to be for people behind you.
You don't ride with anybody else.
That's for me.
Emily, you're much faster than Jimmy. You'll be riding ahead of him. So I can start putting on Emily's bike, but not yours.
The rear flap is meant to be for other people in the group, but I just like the look of it.
Okay, so just...
The front one's for me.
Full disclaimer of you, I am no expert when it comes to mudguards because
clearly.
I'm South African and I never rode in the rain, ever. So we don't even fit mudguards in the shop or give advice on it just because we're not qualified. But... From what I've seen of the bit and bikes coming into the shop with mudguards on, with mudguards, people tend to clean their bikes. Don't tend to clean their bikes properly.
Oh, okay.
So bikes are maintained a lot worse because it's much harder to clean a bike with mudguards on.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a few people that find a way around, but in general, from what we've seen in a bike shop, bikes with mudguards are always the components, everything's in worse condition. So
there's probably also the false sense. Well, ultimately, like, if you finish a bike with mudguards, most of the dirt is hidden.
Yeah.
So you go like, well, it's fine. I'll put it away and forget about it. And there, whereas my bike, I've ridden a couple of times without washing it, and it's got noticeable road splatter all over it. And I'm like, oh, I should clean it. If I had mudguards, it would look spotless still.
The other thing is that fully fitted mudguards is fitted like tight clearances and things like that sprays all the dirt straight back onto all your components.
Yeah.
Arguably your rear mech. Your front mech, bottom bracket and things like that, your hubs, where if you use something like a Arse Saver wind wing or just a normal one, that'll keep you dry. Obviously, it doesn't help Jimmy sitting behind you, Emily, but it doesn't spray everything directly down back onto your bike. So I prefer them. I know it doesn't help anybody else, but it helps me stay dry. It works really well.
It's an unexpected point of view. I'd never considered the idea that actually a mudguard might increase the wear on your bike.
The only thing a mudguard helps is your headset.
Well, and you.
Yeah, I'm talking for a bike, yeah.
So I used to have a road bike with mudguards when I lived in London, specifically for commuting. It was a commuter bike. And I used to commute in all weathers, all conditions, all year round. I used to take about 2 weeks off. If it snowed or it was icy, I would take about 2 weeks off. But in London, that was basically never, because it never got cold enough to actually be icy. And the main point of the mudguards was, the reason I got them initially is I'd be riding home, I'd get absolutely drenched when it was raining, mostly from splash. Because even if it's not raining, if it has rained, you're just getting soaked from splash up. So I was like, well, if I get full mudguards, it's going to mean I'm drier and therefore I'm more likely to commute and it be less unpleasant, and that was why I did it, and it worked in that respect. But then, perhaps there's more maintenance involved as a result of that.
Do you know what the bane of my life is when it comes to winter riding? Is cut out saddles. Because even with an ass saver on, it doesn't quite cover the length of the cutout. And you just literally have your wheel is just spraying water up into your chamois pad constantly.
It's like having a
bidet. It's like sitting in a wet nappy all of the time. I end up putting just like a bit of gaffer tape or Sellotape or something like that under the thing. But inevitably by the end of the ride, that starts dripping off. Well, just need a little like insert to clip back into it.
I think some saddle manufacturers now do saddle gravel versions of their saddles, which have covers.
You've got the groove, but it's still sealed at the bottom.
Right. Well, that's what I want, but I refuse to buy another one.
A saddle bag, specifically just to block that out.
Yeah.
The other thing that's very typical of a winter bike is you have front and rear lights on it basically all of the time. And like, well, in my opinion, I always use a frame pump. But if you are going to use a frame pump at any time, it should definitely be winter, because you're going to just, if you have to repair a puncture, you're going to get back on the road quicker. So generally for winter, I use one bottle rather than two. And then my other bottle, I have all of my spares on, because it's just easier to get access to them. On my summer bike, I usually have a saddle bag, because they're just a bit more fiddly to get in and out of, which if you're cold and on the side of the road, you want less fiddle. Yeah. So usually I have something much more accessible in my second bottle cage, a frame pump, lights on all of the time. But for me, I do that most of the time on all of my bikes anyway.
That's one of the reasons I love tubeless now as well for winter bike riding. Because like I said, when you're cold, it's a hassle being stuck there doing things. If I've got a puncture that doesn't seal, Dyna plug, pop off the cap, stab it in, pull it out, pump my tire up, off I go.
But I guess that is because you have good wheels with a good tire combination.
Yeah.
Because there will be people, and there'll be a lot of people that have tire and wheel combinations that aren't very compatible. So they're going to get a puncture. It's going to end up unseating, and then they're not going to be able to fix their puncture. Whereas I think what's happened over the last 3, 4, 5 years is...
It's less than that. I would say 2 years.
The combinations are getting better, and they're becoming more, there's more knowledge around which ones work well together. Yeah. And I think the bit a lot of people are scared of tubeless, and I was definitely one of those people, is it would have been when we first moved up. So 2019, 2020, and doing gravel rides on, I've already got a set of wheels that are technically tubeless compatible, and then I get them set up tubeless and they just don't work very well together, and you end up having to stuff a tube in. Whereas what you have fine-tuned over the last however many years is you know which tire and wheel combinations are just going to work perfectly, and therefore you know you're going to be able to Dyna plug it pretty much every time, pump it up, you're back on the road, no issues.
I think that's probably the biggest problem we've got in the shop, where people come in and they just die hard, doesn't work, or one of their friends told them, and I get it. I had a customer in last week with a set of Bontrager wheels and a set of GP5000, the first edition they launched, the non-hookless version, and it took me half an hour and I couldn't get the wheels and the tubeless to work. Or just a used tire, but it just would not take. We double taped the rim, we then triple taped the rim, we did everything. It just would not inflate. But then... we've done videos in here where we've used the newer GP5000s on zips, and we pumped it up with a hand pump from flat to seating it up, and it's just easier. So it's just a thing of, firstly, it was wheel sizes, tire sizes, and compatibility, and now sealants, better sealants coming around that just works a lot better.
Yeah.
So obviously I understand that if you don't have the right stuff, it's not going to be easier, but if you've got it, it just makes life a lot easier. In winter.
For people who don't want to buy a dedicated winter bike, what maintenance should they be doing? Should it be regular washing, lubing, and not mud guards? Or
once again, if there's salt on the roads where you're riding, after every single ride, wash your bike. Wash it properly. Degrease the chain, lube it. I know it's labor intensive, but it's going to save you so much money in the long run by not having to.
Do you need to dry it as well?
If you're storing it in a shed. So if you're living in your kitchen or inside your house, then generally no, because it's a dry environment. But if you're living in a shed or in a garage that's humid or wet, it's never going to dry by itself. Then you'd have to dry it. Or you can say lube it or use something like G35, but that's just going to cause you problems if you get in your brake pad. So yeah, it's as simple as wash your bike.
So the message here is wash your bike if you want it to last.
Yeah.
And that actually applies all year round, really, but especially prevalent in winter.
Well, bizarrely, no, actually, we have a problem with some customers that overwash their bikes. So in summer, if you were to wash it too much and you don't lube it, or they pressure wash it, they actually take all the grease out of their bikes, and then because it's summer, they don't think about it, and that causes an issue.
But that's washing technique being the issue.
True. Yeah, yeah.
Now on to our big question, or should I say questions, because this week we're going to play a game that we're calling Love, Tolerate, Kill. I'm going to list three things, for example, SRAM, Shimano, or Campag, and you're going to have to pick which one you love, which one you tolerate, and which one you'd kill off entirely if you could. So it's basically snog, marry, avoid, but we're changing it up because no one wants to imagine you snogging group sets, even though I've caught you doing it before in the shop.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So first up in Love, Tolerate, Kill, we are going to do that example. SRAM, Shimano, Campag. Which one do you love? Which one do you tolerate? And which one would you kill off?
This is a hard one because it's dependent on my stage of my life and stage of what they are producing. So if you asked me 10 years ago, it was die hard. Never loved anything more, would have tattooed it on my chest, Campag.
Now, it's not even 10 years ago, because when I first met you, which is like four, five, six years ago, you were just like, you have to get a Campag group set and you have to get a Cinelli bike. You were like Mr. Italy when it comes to bikes.
I loved Campag so much. From the first day I started riding a bike, I loved it. I loved it more than anything. I would have tolerated Shimano back then, and I hated SRAM. Really just didn't like it. I didn't like the double tap. Personal preference, and I think it's what you get used to and the way it worked.
I did, you know what, I'm exactly the same as you. So 10 years ago I had Campag and I thought it was gorgeous. I raced on Shimano because it just worked better, and I wouldn't ever have even considered SRAM, although SRAM at that time was the lightest group set, but it was so expensive that I was just like, oh, I want it, because I was obsessed with weight. But it's so expensive, I'm just going to get my Shimano deal on Wiggle.
I was stubborn as well, I think, because SRAM was something new back then that it wasn't, yeah. Now, if you ask me, I love SRAM. I love SRAM more than anything. I'm enjoying it more. It just works. It's just, with years and years and years of doing stuff, it just works better. I know loads of people disagree with this. I can tolerate Shimano at the moment just because they make a good product. I feel that some of their business practices are dubious and for me, and the durability isn't there. And I hate Campag at the moment.
You hate them?
Yes.
Good job you didn't get that tattoo.
No, I'd kill off Campag. I know it's a good thing. At the moment. And the reason is that they just do... It's just slow to progress. And the new groups are so expensive, the wireless groups. It uses two different batteries. Was it last year or the year before they tried to sell me the new gravel wheels they made? And it's got open ball bearings. And I told them that doesn't last up here. And I got told, just think how much money you can make servicing the wheels for customers. And I was like, that's just not an actual way of doing things. Because you're not, I can't sell somebody a set of wheels for over £1,000 and then have to service them every 2 or 3 months to keep them on. They'll never buy anything off me again. And yeah, so that's...
That's a terrible sales pitch from them, isn't it?
I know. Well, it wasn't from Campag. That was from the rep.
Right.
I'm with you. I'm kill on Campag because they're just so... They are without a doubt the most beautiful group set out of all of the group sets. Top end Campag group sets are just beautiful. They're just beautiful. If I was going to build a beautiful bike to put on a wall, it would probably have cam bag on it. I'm never going to do that.
I would still buy a 12-speed super record mechanical group set, rim brake.
Yeah,
100%. I love it. Yeah, for a rim brake bike, it's cam bag. 100%. I wish I can turn around. I feel now that Wiggle is gone or going or what's happening with Wiggle. I hope Campag can come back and actually start looking after the small bike shops again. Forget about the big onlines, because those are the people that built them over the last 50 or 60 years, was traditional bike shops. Come back and help them do more things. Speak to them. See what they want. Don't just randomly make things without actually discussing it with bike shops and turn around. But at the moment, it's kill.
I'm kind of torn between SRAM and Shimano at the minute, because I like SRAM, I like Shimano. I've used both of their group sets pretty extensively across all of their mid to top end range. That's most of their group sets, especially with the stuff that we've been doing with Cade Media over the last 12 months or however long it is. I was a massive SRAM fanboy over the last probably 2 years, probably influenced by you quite significantly. I've used some more Shimano stuff recently and I'm really enjoying it. What I hadn't used until more recently was Shimano DI2 stuff, and the DI2 is very good. So I'm a bit torn, and I think for the purpose of this conversation, I'm going to tolerate SRAM and love Shimano.
I love a new Shimano as well, but my thing from in the bike shop is after about 6 months or 9 months, especially with the gravel group, say it's ride the bike, it just never works again like it did originally. And that's my problem with it.
Next one is DI2, ETAP and mechanical shifting. I want to say kill mechanical shifting.
Really?
Yes, love DI2, tolerate ETAP. But I do love mechanical shifting. However, if I have the opportunity to never own a mechanical shifting bike again, apart from a retro, modern, sexy steel bike build like my Moss bike, then that should still have mechanical rim brakes on it like it does.
Surely you can't get rid of mechanical shifting. Like, it works fine. It's less expensive. Like, talking about bikes for the masses.
Well, yeah, I know, but like, I'm what I'm saying is I'm converted to electric shifting because it's lush. Oh. It is proper lush. But
spoiled.
That's
true, but I can't deny it. So I think we need to stop thinking of groups as specific. Let's just think of the way it works. It's 100% love ETAP because it's fully wireless and the batteries are interchangeable and easily sorted. We're going to have to tolerate DI2 because electronic shifting is still good, but the battery is internal, which causes you issues if it dies on a ride because you can't carry a spare. And the shifters with the two buttons being close to each other is terrible. And we're going to have to kill mechanical shifting because eventually it's gone. We killed off the penny farthing.
No.
We are going to kill off mechanical shifting eventually.
I refuse to believe it.
It's just one of those things. There are some good mechanical shifts back. 9-speed Euro Ace, beautiful group set. 10-speed Record Titanium, beautiful group set. All 8-speed group sets just worked really well. 11-speed was a bit of a failure across the board. It would have worked well when it was new, and then eventually the mechanical just went wrong. With pivot play and things like that, corrosion, cables. Yes, people talk about simplicity of things, but as technology goes, electronics, having to charge things, it's just easier. Fixing your bike, home mechanics is going to become easier. It's much more simplified telling people, click a button. There's apps now to tell you how to set your gears.
To be fair, ETAP is bonkers easy to use, and you could literally move your mechs from one bike to another and it not be an issue.
There was a thing back in the day that said it takes 15 minutes to switch an ETAP group set from one bike to another bike if you didn't have to cut hydraulic hoses.
Yeah.
That was a rim brake version, I think, yeah.
Titanium carbon alloy.
Titanium.
What about it?
Just titanium. Love titanium. Love titanium. For the environment, I'm going to say kill carbon, tolerate alloy. Alloy is recyclable, carbon's not.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of riding, I would say tolerate carbon, kill alloy. Love titanium on every aspect there is. There's nothing that you can't love it for.
For this one, I am kill carbon, love alloy, tolerate titanium. Alloy is cheap. It works really well. The only thing I don't like about it is if you write it off, it's written off. Yes, like you, well, you can recycle the material, presumably, but in terms of once you crack the bike, it can't be repaired. As far, I've never known anyone, I've never heard of anything about alloy bike repair. It's like once it's cracked, it gets written
off. Yeah, it's just gone, but also I think with time, your alloy bike will become softer.
But to crack it in the first place is quite hard. It's harder to write off an alloy bike than it is to write off a carbon bike, in my opinion.
Yes, but an alloy bike will deteriorate with time. How much you ride it is going to depend on how quickly.
But it still, but yeah, it still works.
But like I say, it's, for me, it's more of a, at the moment, it's more of a thing of kill carbon because of, I understand it's innovative, but in terms of what's the end game here? What do we do with carbon? I think Silke has found a way to take the resin out and cut it down to make tubular sealant, but it's still like, yeah, that's my standpoint on it. It's not a thing of...
It's unnecessary, isn't it? Yeah, it's like unnecessary. Like, for example, in cars, you only see carbon in cars when they're like uber expensive race cars at the top, top end. The stuff that we are driving every day are just, you know, made of alloy and steel and, well, metals. So like, it seems unnecessary for us to be on carbon bikes, apart from the fact we are obsessed with weight.
Can I just say as well, on the topic of environment and unnecessary things, because I know we will get it in the comments, the electronic shifting obviously creates a reliance on energy, which mm-hmm. is very environmentally friendly. So I'm just putting it out there because I know every time we've talked about this before, it's unnecessary and it creates a reliance on electricity.
But mechanical gear cables and outer housing that's cased in plastic will go through a lot more than that than through batteries. I have in the, as a bike shop.
Oh, but there is no way that those plastic outers have a larger environmental impact than batteries.
And the charging of those batteries every single time you need to.
So, gravel road time trial.
Oh, kill time trial. What's the point in that? It's not fun.
I love time trial.
You just suffer and you hurt. No, definitely kill time trial. Tolerate road, because it's still enjoyable to do. Love gravel.
So, if... in a figurative environment whereby if I rode on the road, there was never, ever, ever any issues with cars.
Yeah,
if
definitely.
It was as safe to ride on a road as it was to ride off-road in terms of accidents with other vehicles and other road users, mine would be kill gravel, love road, tolerate time trial. And I know that sounds bonkers, but it's because road riding is the best thing in the world. It is unbelievably amazing. It feels wicked. The bike flow. I'm obsessed with it. I love it. However, I don't do it as my primary riding because I'm always thinking about.
Do you enjoy the road because of the thrill of the speed and things like that?
Well, it's not even. It isn't even just about the thrill of the speed. It just flows. It's just everything. It just moves.
It's easier.
It flows. You don't have to pedal continuously
not use
resistance.
Your brakes on a gravel bike, and then you've got that fear of death the whole time. And it's just...
it isn't about fear of death. It's nothing to do with that.
Yeah, where time trialing is just pain and suffering.
Oh, I love time trialing. I love it. I'm actually considering getting a time trialing bike again.
No.
Next up, we're going to go into some bike brands. Cannondale, Trek, Specialized.
Kill all three. love Cannondale.
What?
I hate some of the marketing stuff they do. I hate some of the terrible choices and bottom brackets and things they do. But they make a beautiful bike. And they do every now and then paint schemes. And they've got some classic bikes. Back in the day, Mario Cipollini's red with the yellow, the Seiko team.
20 to 30 years ago, Cannondale were...
Yeah.
The perfect bike brand.
I have never thought of a Specialized being a nice looking bike until some of the modern stuff looks nice. The more plain things they do. Don't ask me to name them, but yeah. So I'll tolerate Specialized for that. And I'll kill Trek for the fact that they still do the crazy stuff that Cannondale does. And
you mean like weird proprietary stuff, I'm guessing?
Yeah, weird proprietary, stupid brakes in the dome. That seat post nonsense of theirs on, it's just, the massive branding on the side. I personally just don't like it.
Should we move on to the next one? So these are all bike brands that Nick sells. Sarto, Tomasini, Time. So Sarto is an Italian custom carbon manufacturer. They make them all in Italy. Tommasini is a custom, well, actually, they, I think they both do off the shelf as well, but you can do custom on both. Tommasini is a steel Italian bike manufacturer, and Time is a French carbon, not custom carbon manufacturer that has a weave thing, which is also like Fesco, which are a lot more expensive. So there we go. Love, tolerate, kill. Go.
This is like, ask me which one of my children you want me to kill off. which one I love most.
You only have one child, don't you?
Luckily for you guys, or luckily for me, and lucky for you, I find a loophole in this one. I'm going to go love Time because the innovation and how they make their frame set. So they do, obviously, the how they weave the carbon on a loom. So yeah, innovation-wise, there's nobody close to them. So I'm going to have to say love that. Tolerate Sato. And I'm only saying tolerate Sato because they make unbelievable bikes, but the carbon is not the same as Time's. So that's the only reason. And then I could never kill Tommasini because Tommasini is my favorite bike brand of all time, but they're making an electric bike. So kill the electric Tommasini.
What? We like e-bikes.
I like e-bikes, but it's just not what Tommasini is about. Tommasini is about classic steel. Yeah. With Camper Group sits on it. But as a brand, I love Tommasini the most.
Wheels. Hunt MV DT Swiss.
Kill Hunt straight away. don't even need to expand on that one. I love Envy and tolerate DT Swiss. DT Swiss always made a good wheel set. Good quality, good engineering. They make too many different things maybe. Envy is just it's Envy. I love it. They've been on the forefront of carbon fiber for wheels. They give you a lifetime warranty. They look after their customers. Hunt looks after the customers really well, but I just, from a bike shop, we've just had too many problems.
Right. Next one is, this is a great one. One by gearing, two by gearing, fixed gear. Does it have to be fixed gear or can it be single speed?
Fixed gear.
Every bike's a single speed if you just don't change gears or your batteries die. So no, not a single speed, it's fixed gear. Love one by. In this scenario, I'm going to tolerate fixed gear. I sold my fixie last week, but I do enjoy riding it. And kill two by.
You're going to get some hate.
Two by is just not necessary anymore. Now with 12 speed group sets. If you will tour, yes, by all means, make them their own two by group sets that they can go race with. But the average person, there's enough gear range. This whole gear jump nonsense is not a thing anymore, in my opinion. One by is easier to explain to new people to ride bikes. So during pandemic, sort of people that never owned bikes, you didn't have to explain to them about cross-chaining or when to ride in the small cog, when to ride in the big cog. It's just a thing of smaller gears at the back makes you go a little bit faster, but it's harder to pedal. Big gears makes it easier to go uphill, but you go a bit slower. Simple as that.
Your arguments are absolutely fantastic, but I still don't agree with you. Fixed gear is going in the bin because it is the worst thing in the world. Tolerate one by because there's some places that it makes sense, and I love two by.
Fixed gear is just
dead.
The purity of it all.
Get rid of it.
If you want a winter bike that you don't have to worry
single
about.
Single speed, though. I love single speed. Pedal systems. Shimano SPD SL, so that's Shimano's road pedal system. Look, Kyo and Speedplay. So three different road systems.
Very easy.
Speedplay for the win.
No, Speedplay needs to be killed off. First thing, gone. Get rid of Speedplay. It is absolutely pointless. Love Shimano SPD SL. It's just been always been a dependable, good road pedal. Tolerate Look Kyo. Look makes an unbelievably good mountain bike pedal, but they don't have reliability when it comes to their road pedals.
So I'm killing Look. I tolerate Shimano SPD SLs. I've never really used them. So we've got the Garmin Rally Road pedals. Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
Which are obviously the same sort of system, which is a one-sided thing. And because I've just never really used that style of pedal, I'm like a proper noob when I use them. You know, well, Francis and I will pull over on the side of the road to do like a hill section for a video, and I'm like fumbling trying to get into the pedal. Because it's just new to me.
You step in the dirt with your Speedplays and then you can't ride your bike anymore.
I've used Speedplays for probably pushing 15 years now, at least 10 years, And that has never, ever once been an issue for me, ever.
This is a terrible topic that Emily's put in here because we all know time is best for everything pedal-wise.
Why am I standing in the dirt on a road ride?
I don't know.
Exactly.
Roads are dirty up, yeah. Time pedals all the way. Nice in your knees. Yes, the cleats wear out quickly, but they're just so good.
Right, tyres. Oh, this is a great one. So Schwalbe Marathon Plus, Panracer Gravel Kings and Continental Gator Skins. Which one do you love?
Panracer Gravel King for the love.
Yep. Tolerate?
Schwalbe Marathon Plus.
And Kill?
Gator Skins. They're not grippy enough.
For whatever reason, when it's wet, they are slippery tyres. Yes. So I'm killing.
In my opinion, for me personally, it's too much risk. Schwalbe Marathon Plus tyres, your teeth are going to fall out because they're so hard, but they're very puncturous and they last forever. So I get there's a really good point for them. And then Panaracer Gravel Kings puncture incredibly easily, but with some sealant, you can probably offset that. And out of the three, they are the most supple and comfortable, meaning you can enjoy your ride more. That's faster, and that's why I love them.
So I actually found Gravel Kings quite slippery as well. Not as slippery as Gator Skins. So I'm killing Gator Skins. I will tolerate Gravel Kings, and I love Marathon Plus because you can bang them on a bike and you can just forget that they're even there.
In the Panaracer's defense, I think it's the Gravel King SKs are slippery on tarmac, but the normal Gravel Kings, the smooth ones, are actually okay on tarmac.
I'll take your word for it. Time for another round of overrated or underrated. I'm going to read out a list of things and you're going to tell me if you think they're overrated or underrated. So first up, we have rollers. Suggestion from Carl, who says, I sold my trainer and got rollers instead and I can't go back. Easier to set up and takes a day to learn. Plus, they keep you more focused on your pedaling.
I was going to say underrated, but I'm going overrated. As a training device, rollers don't work, in my opinion. To learn skills and to warm up before races, yes, it's much simpler because your bike drops on your ride and it's good for skills. But to get fit, it's just not going to do the same as what a turbo trainer is going to do for you.
I personally think rollers are absolutely rubbish. I used to race and I never used to warm up on rollers. I would just go and ride around the roads wherever I was, whether that's cyclocross or time trials or crit races. I would just go off of the circuit, or quite often the circuits will give you the opportunity to warm up on them anyway. So I would always just warm up like that. I've used rollers and I just don't get on with them. But on the subject of rollers, we have literally on Cade Media just dropped a video called I Tried Every Tax Indoor Trainer to Find Out the Best One. And Francis and I look at rollers along with a lot of the other tax range. So maybe if you're interested in rollers or other turbo trainers, you should check out that video.
They are really good for handling and confidence.
Yeah, I think everybody should know how to ride.
I used to go to a women's skills class on a Tuesday night where we literally just rode on rollers for an hour and threw balls back and forth in a circle to get our, I don't know, bike proficiency up, and it was really good.
But you didn't need to do that on rollers. You could have done that session on
a tennis court.
Well, yeah, you could have just ridden a bike.
Yes, you could. They did outside ones as well, but I think in the winter and stuff, yeah.
Because I actually have I have the Level 1 Triathlon Federation coaching certificate. I can't remember what it's actually specifically called. And part of the bike skills sessions is things like riding under, like limbo, but not like lean back limbo. Basically going under like bars on your bike, because it teaches you to kind of move your weight in different ways on the bike and get down low and things like that.
I mean, he says he sold his trainer and got rollers instead and he wouldn't go back. So, I mean, if it works for you, doesn't it?
Yeah, fair. Next up, dropper posts on gravel bikes. So this is suggested by John in Redhill, who said, I'm looking at getting my first gravel bike and I wonder if it's worthwhile adding one. Hype or not worth it, I do love my dropper posts on my mountain bike. So I'm going to start here and you can come in later. I have a custom made steel gravel bike that is set up to be a proper gravel bike, i.e. nearly a mountain bike, but not quite. I had a dropper post on it and I just didn't ever use it, so I took it back off again. If you are from a mountain bike background, the chances are you're going to enjoy a dropper on a gravel bike. If you're from a road bike background getting into it, you're probably never going to think, oh, I need a dropper in this scenario, unless you ride with Nick Vieri, in which case you should be on a mountain bike anyway.
Proper post is underrated. I come from a full on road bike background. Didn't ride a mountain bike at all as a kid, apart from when I was really small and didn't have a road bike. But I wasn't a mountain bike. I rode my mountain bike on the roads. Started riding gravel. It's my first foray into off-road riding. Got a drop-up post and I can never go back. I actually miss my drop-up post on my road bike now.
Ridiculous.
Because you descend faster.
This is ridiculous.
Anyway, it's underrated. It's the most underrated product, not for gravel, for all bikes.
that is an outrageous statement.
They should make a time trial drop-up post so that like when you get in the descent, you can tuck even closer, get you know like more aero. Imagine the gains. It'll be a whole new subsection of bikes Cannondale can come up to sell to people that they don't need.
Next batch rule suggested by Chris. Bike bells or horns?
Underrated. Every bike should have a bell on it. On our bike backing trip this weekend, my bell didn't work because of the way Josh Reed fitted my bar bag. I should have done it myself maybe. And Rob didn't have a bell because his bike aero handlebars can't take a bell. And it was just terrible having to shout people to like make them aware we were coming past them. It's just, I think it's underrated.
I think they're underrated as well. When we were in London, I've got a really loud whistling technique. So I used to whistle instead of having a bell. But what I found when we moved to the Northeast is people just assume that it's like a bird or something or other, and they just ignore you. So you, up here, you have to have a bell because there's so much nature. Whereas in London, the whistle works really well. And usually I would use the whistle in London when pedestrians walk out in the road and you're trying not to hit
them. I'm just worried sometimes of coming across as rude or like, I've got a lad that we ride with that rings his bell repeatedly when he goes, and it just annoys me so much. Just ring it once or twice. Make them aware. You don't want to like scare people out of the way. You just want them to know you're coming. Nighttime gravel is really good for this because the lights are so bright that people know you're coming from like 4 miles away.
I didn't realize that you were ever concerned about being rude. Keep sending your suggestions to wildonespodcast@cademedia.co.uk and we might read yours out on the next show. So next up, we have Fluff Up of the Week. Do you want to do this one or me?
I will do it and I will do it quickly. Listeners of last week's show probably wouldn't have noticed any problem. However, because I seamlessly edited it to edit out my mistake. However, we filmed a bit, didn't we, at Christmas when Francis was still here. We filmed a little bit that we were going to put into last week's episode, which was basically Jimmy starting the podcast saying, "Welcome, we're here with Emily and Francis." And Francis went, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, wait a second. I'm not meant to be here. You're on your own," and was going to go off. And then you did a little click and it was a transition to the next week. And then you're like, "Oh, a bit of magic. I'm joined by Nick." And the reason we did that is because we have some adverts for our show going out on Acast. And we wanted to let people, because Francis was in that advert, so we wanted to let people know that Francis was the usual guest, but he wasn't here this week. However, what happened was I did press record on the microphones, but they didn't pick up any of the audio.
For whatever reason.
So we basically had really, really bad audio just coming out of the cameras. That was so terrible. We had to just scrap the whole thing, and it meant we didn't really have a proper intro, so I nicked an intro off a previous week and just put for the video just put my face and your face in, so you couldn't see Jimmy wasn't actually speaking. And I think it worked seamlessly. I don't think he would have noticed.
It did. Very good.
However, it would have been very good, but it couldn't happen, so sorry. And
who's this Francis character you're talking about? Is he coming back?
Now for more listeners' takeover. So last week we discussed bike muggings, which are becoming more common in the UK. And we asked for other people around the world to send in some emails if they are also experiencing this kind of theft, where in this country people have come at you with a bike and sometimes a machete and stealing your bike, probably whilst you're on it. We've had emails from Australia, Canada, Philadelphia, and California, and they've all said that while thefts of bikes are quite high, they haven't experienced moped muggings. So what we can deduce from that, at least for the time being, is that it is a uniquely British problem that we're getting these moped bike muggings. If you wanted to know more about that, have a listen to last week's podcast because we go into it in quite a bit of detail. We also had a question from Henry. I got into cycling around the 2012 boom. I bought a standard entry-level road bike, a Rose Pro RS, in 2013 with an aluminium frame and a carbon fork, around the £900 mark at the time, and I've loved it ever since. The only significant upgrade it's had is the wheel set and tyres. My question, how long should I expect the frame to last? What are the signs it's deteriorating and how should I expect it to deteriorate? Slowly or all at once? Is it safer to replace after a certain age slash mileage or can I keep going? And if I should replace it, what's the ethical way to dispose of it? I assume it's not cool to sell or give away a frame that might be unsafe. If it helps, it has been kept indoors and lovingly maintained all that time. It still feels like new to me. My mileage has been varied, but around 1 to 3K per year. I would estimate a minimum of 12,000 miles in the time I've had it. It's been the best money I've ever spent and I will happily keep it going if I can.
So when I was growing up in the bike shop, generally we were told alloy bikes last 5 years. But at that point, I think the people aimed it at was back home, people doing about 400 to 500 kilometers a week. So that is a considerable amount of riding. So based on this, I think as long as the frame visibly looking at it doesn't have any bubbling or corrosion or cracks forming with that kind of distance, that bike should last them quite a bit. As long as you look after it in terms of cleaning it, drying it, keeping salt and things like that away and just having a look at it, it'll last. In terms of ethically disposing of it, that depends where you live. I don't know. Do you take it to a recycling center? Yeah, it's a difficult one, but I wouldn't worry too much about it as long as the bike's being looked after. Also, having bought the bike in 2012 for that price means it would be an excellent bike.
With alloy bikes, my understanding is that it should last a long time. And ultimately, you're going to know if there's something wrong with it.
To simplify it massively is if you took a Coca-Cola can made out of aluminium and you fold it, you kept folding it again and again and again, same place. After about 10 folds or so, it'll just crack or snap in half. And that's exactly what it is. So essentially, it's the more you ride it, the more pressure you put through it and weight and power. The bike has many flexes all the time. And eventually, those flexes just become too much for it. So it will crack eventually.
The benefit, I think, of alloy as well, though, is in theory, if one of your stays cracks, the bike isn't going to just like fall to pieces. Or it's unlikely that it would crumble into pieces underneath you.
That's a dangerous thing for me to say yes or no. In theory, yes. But listen out for it. Generally, from a bike shop's perspective, what we've noticed is if you get a bike that creaks a lot and you've done everything, seat post, quick release axles, bottom bracket, then all the usual suspects and the bike still creaks while riding it, you start looking for cracks in the frame. So generally speaking, and with past experience, it'll be the bike will start making horrible noises before it snaps. Or at the run, the dropouts is probably the most common. You'll start seeing like the paint bubbling and that's quite a sign that something's going wrong.
I guess it depends as well, is if you're maintaining the bike yourself, you're less likely, I would imagine you're less likely to notice if something is really wrong with it. The beauty of using a good reputable bike shop is, you know, if I was taking that bike into you to service every year, you're going to know, either it's going to be a case of there's a lot of creaks that you can't solve, therefore it might be something else, or you're, as part of, you know, doing the annual service on it or however often you do the service on it, that you notice, oh, actually, do you know what? There's a hairline crack on this BB, or the BB doesn't sit right. Actually, it's because there's a crack there. So I guess there's, again, an argument for using a good, reputable local bike shop that knows what they're doing, because you're more likely to notice, like identify these things.
And it's the same thing as the Shimano crankset failures. It's just moisture getting in and it's causing issues with the alloy.
Keep sending in your questions, stories and fun stuff to wildonespodcast@cademedia.co.uk. If you liked the episode, please take a moment to leave us a 5-star review or leave a like and comment if you're watching on YouTube. It doesn't take long. It helps us to boost the profile of this podcast and to continue to put it out for free. Catch you next time.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.